Thank you very much for the introduction. And it's a real pleasure to come here and give this seminar. Thank you very much for coming to hear me. So I will talk, the title is very generic. I will do a bit of a mix of a few things that you will see once I go on explaining. And this talk is based on some work that I did previously in collaboration with some people who are pretty much scattered around Europe and around the world. And in particular, it deals with a recent work that I did with a PhD student at Columbia University, whose name is Ruben Montel. So let me first give you some introduction and motivation for this talk. Well, I think that everybody in this audience is familiar with the fact that black holes can be seen more as thermodynamic ensemble other than elementary objects. And in particular, the thermodynamics of black holes in anti-de Sitter is very rich. And this fact stems from one of the remarkable effects of anti-de Sitter spacetime. And indeed, a negative cosmological constant seem to have a stabilizing effect on black hole physics. In particular, you have that anti-de Sitter black holes can be in equilibrium with radiation at a fixed temperature. Namely, ADS black holes can have positive specific heat. And in particular, there exist several branches of black holes which are stable. And phase transition between different branches of black hole can arise. And these phase transitions are very are very much welcome and are very much pleasant because they can be interpreted as a phase transition in the dual field theory by means of the ADS-CFT correspondence. One of the prototypes probably of this sort of phase transition involving anti-de Sitter black holes is the Hawking-Page phase transition, which arises between a Schwarzschild anti-de Sitter black hole and ADS field with thermal radiation. It was discovered by Hawking and Page and was interpreted as a confinement-deconfinement phase transition in the dual conformal field theory. Moreover, there have been phase transitions between anti-de Sitter black holes and the subsequent interpretation at the level of the dual field theory had a surprisingly huge, effect on, there were discovered many more types of phase transition between black holes, and they were subsequently interpreted, and some of them were also used to explain the holographic superconductor, as many of the people here in the audience might know very well. So what am I gonna start discussing in this talk, and I will go on and explain. I will treat anti-de Sitter black holes, which arise as specific solutions of theories which arise as reductions of M theory or string theory. Namely, I will deal with black holes who can be embedded in higher dimensions, and which. And this has the advantage of having an exact holographic dual field theory, Therefore, we will focus on particular kind of models, which are called gauge supergravity, which arise indeed as a reduction of M theory on seven-dimensional Sasaki-Einstein manifold. So why we focus on that? Well, N equals 2 gauge supergravity in four dimensions allow for a scalar potential, and the scalar potential mimics the effect of a cosmological constant, and in particular, specific models of gauge supergravity, which will be the one that I will discuss, will allow for a potential with anti-de Sitter vacuum. Therefore, we will have supersymmetric anti-de Sitter vacuum, but also supersymmetric black holes, which asymptotes to anti-de Sitter spacetime, four-dimensional anti-de Sitter spacetime. Moreover, the fact that we deal with supergravity and supergravity equations and supersymmetric solution will allow us to find solutions by means of first-order equations. Namely, we can get black holes who are supersymmetric by solving the Killing-Spinor equation that are first-order differential equation. They can be traded for the much more complicated Einstein scalar and Maxwell system of second-order equation of motion. Moreover, supergravity is also amenable to solution-generating techniques. So some of the solution generating techniques that were known to be valid for black holes in asymptotically flat spacetime, namely from theories which are of the form ungauged supergravity, can be actually used, can be actually borrowed in order to find or to generalize the known solution also of gauged supergravity. So this is a plus, it's an advantage for working in this framework. Moreover, we will have that the presence of additional, gauged supergravity comes with matter into supermultiplet, and in particular, other than the metric or the gauge field, we will have also scalars. And the presence of additional matter, and we will see, and in particular the scalar fields, it's actually a prerequisite for the solutions to be there. Namely, without any scalars, we will see that we will not have, for instance, supersymmetric static black holes. And it's also an advantage by the fact that all this additional matter will have a role in the thermodynamics, so it will allow for a richer thermodynamics. And moreover, one of the latest motivations that I will touch upon in the future is that most of the studies involving multicenter BPS black holes were carried out already in theories of n equals 2 supergravity. And if we want the simplest uplift of this scenario to anti-de Sitter, then we decided to work in n equals 2 gauge supergravity in 4 dimensions. So the outline of my talk is as follows. So first of all, I will give you a bit of an overview of the known solutions of gauge supergravity which are known so far. And this includes BPS solutions, so supersymmetric solution that preserve some amount of supersymmetry. But also I will explain how, given a known solution, one can actually deform it, or can actually apply solution generated techniques to get non-BPS solutions, and in particular also non-extremal ones, so with solutions with temperature, which are useful for probing the thermodynamic ensemble. And I will also explain how people recently performed the microstate counting for this sort of ADS4 solutions via ADS4 CFT3. Then I will start dealing with black hole bound states, and I'll talk about the relation with the holographic vitrification picture. And I will explain and I will show a new solution which arises from the compatibilization on M theory on a specific Sasaki-Einstein manifold called N111. And I will end then with a discussion, and a discussion about, in particular, about the probe analysis and on the possible presence of bound states of this kind of black hole in anti-de Sitter spacetime. So first of all, let me start with the simplest model of n equals 2 gauge supergravity coupled with matter. So the simplest model that we can have in this scenario arises as compactification of M theory on a 7 sphere, and it is abelian Philae-Leopoldus gauge supergravity in the absence of hypermultiplets. In this model, the quaternionic moment maps are set constant and are set equal, and they are called Philae-Leopoldus parameters. And again, this theory is called gauge supergravity because an U1 subgroup of the R symmetry is actually gauged. I will now explain you how, at least I wrote here the bosonic action, because that's what we really need for our computation. So the bosonic action of Philae-Leopoldus gauge supergravity is composed of the Einstein-Hilbert term. There is also a sigma model for the scalars. There are kinetic terms for the vectors. These are the field strength. And the vectors are also coupled via these two matrices, I lambda sigma and R lambda sigma, which actually depend on the scalar fields of the theory, which are denoted by Z. So there is the additional coupling, which is typical of supergravity theories, of vectors with the scalar fields. So the introduction of the gauging, in particular in this sort of things, we will be interested in electric gauging, is responsible for a gauge potential, for a scalar potential to arise, which is written here. Moreover, the introduction of the gauging gives also electric charges for the fermions in the theory. So the gravitini and the gaugini, which are the fermions in our theory, will have electric charge, which are proportional to the gauge coupling constant and the Philae-Leopoldus parameters. Notice that in this sort of scenario, the scalar fields are not charged. So there is no covariant derivative here. These are just simple derivatives. And these will have they will bring a lot of simplification to our equation, to the Suzy variations, or also to the Einstein's equation, and in such a way that these will be important because analytic solutions can be found to the equation of motion of this Lagrangian, or analytic solution can be found to the supersymmetry equation if we impose a supersymmetry variation to V0. And I think that this is one of the reasons why actually such analytic tractation is actually possible in this case. So people started to look at this sort of Lagrangians, this sort of theories, because they wanted to see if there exist actually supersymmetric black holes in these sort of scenarios already in the 90s, at the end of the 90s. The point is that, so the first solution that one can try and find are one who are found by setting all the scalars to be constant. So if we set all the scalars to be constant, we will try to find solutions. And this was made by maybe Romans and also Sabra. So try to find for a half BPS solutions and a quarter BPS solution gives naked singularity. And on the same footing, if we allow for non-constant scalars but one half BPS solutions, so imposing that our solution would preserve one half of the supersymmetry, also leads to naked singularity. So for a bit of time, like BPS black holes of this sort of theory, actually static BPS black holes in this sort of theory, were believed not to actually exist. But a few years ago, Cacciatori and Clem instead showed that if we have a non-trivial radial profile for the scalars and we allow for a reduced amount of supersymmetry, then actually one can have static black holes with spherical event horizon, which do not contain actually naked singularity. So the singularity is really shielded by a proper horizon. And these were found actually by lowering the amount of supersymmetry preserved. So the black holes that were found in this sort of scenario were actually, instead of preserving one half of the supersymmetry, they preserve only one quarter. So in our language, would be out of the 8 supercharges, which are relevant to the theory of n=2, this solution here will preserve only 2 supercharges out of the total. Let me now a bit explain how is the solution. So this is a prototype of the solution that that Cacciatori and Clem found the first, and was later generalized also by all these people. So I will show you the solution with the with the square root prepotential, and only one vector multiplet. So in total, we will have two vectors and one scalar. So the matrix is shown in the first line. So this matrix is that of a spacetime who approaches anti-de Sitter spacetime for large r. So with r going to infinity, this matrix asymptotes anti-de Sitter. And but for a suitable range of parameter, this warp factor would admit a zero, since it would admit a proper horizon. And I will show it later. And so this solution is purely magnetic, so that it has no actually, it has no electric charges. So as you can see here, the magnetic fields are just spherically symmetric, and they are parameterized by the value p lambda, which are the magnetic charges. And the scalar field is purely real. So in this sort of scenario, the black hole is supported by a scalar which is purely real. This will change when you add also electric charge. The dionic solution will have a scalar field which is actually complex, but in this case, a purely magnetic solution, the scalar field has just a reality condition. So, moreover, supersymmetry also requires that the Dirac quantization condition is satisfied for a specific value of the right-hand side, namely, the Dirac quantization condition relates the charges of the fermions in the theory, namely Gaugini and Gravitini, and the magnetic charges of the black hole. And while the Dirac quantization condition in general will allow this to be an integer, supersymmetry singles out that the integer should be plus or minus 1 only.
So let me ask, how many parameters? You have 2 magnetic charges.
I have 2 magnetic charges, but
I have a mass. For the black hole.
So this in this solution, solution being extremal, so the mass is related to the charges of the black hole.
The magnetic charges, and then is there another parameter? Or is that
yes, it would be B1. B1 is the parameter. Oops, B1 is a parameter related to the scalar here. If you want to,
it's an independent
parameter. No, they're not independent. That is the next slide.
Okay.
So if you want the whole solution, you can trade B1, which is the parameter responsible for the scalar here, for the charge, for one of the charges,
right.
And the other is related as well.
So
and C is also written in function of the scalar here parameter.
So it's a total of 2
one.
Parameters.
Actually, one because
only one parameter.
Because the magnetic charges are related. Via this condition here.
Right.
So So this one makes you write one magnetic charge in terms of the other. And also the parameter B1 is written in function of P1.
Just
one parameter that is tunable. And actually, once you, so you can choose to tune either, yeah, either you can choose this one to be the independent parameter or B1. But the main point is that for a suitable range of parameters, there is a horizon who shields the singularity. And you can see that this is due to the fact that the scalars are varying because from this relation here. So remember that C appeared in the warp factor here. So if this factor here goes to zero, like if this reaches zero, it means that our solution has a horizon, which is actually a double root. So this this solution, like this black hole here, would be an extremal black hole. And in order for this to be true, C needs to be negative. And C is negative only if the parameter B1, so C, reaches a negative value only if B1 is big enough. So only for if B1 is zero, the scalars are constant. And so you will never have a zero in your solution. So the solution will not have a horizon, will have just a naked singularity. So that's why for this sort of solution, it's really important for the scalar field to be non-trivially, to have a non-trivial radial profile, because otherwise you would not have a horizon. The singularity would be just a naked singularity. So just to recap how is the solution. So I told you that it's so a purely magnetic solution. It was the first one that was found. It's also extremal, and it has an ADS2 cross S2 near horizon geometry. So this black hole can be seen as interpolating from an ADS4 to an ADS2 cross S2 near horizon throat. So the solution is, as well exists with different horizon horizon topology. So actually, there exist variants of this solution who are brains or also other sort of more, like higher genus genus topology. And in this case, the quantization condition gets modified. So for a black brain, this parameter here is related to the curvature of the event horizon. So the quantization condition will single out the value zero for a brain because the curvature is just zero. And another thing to take into account, well, there are two very important things that I will make you notice here. So first of all is that these solutions here were found quite late, let's say, because all the solutions that we're trying to find before, they were 1/2 BPS, and they were taking the ansatz for the killing spinner were actually taken from the asymptotically flat solution. But the killing spinner of 1/2 BPS with just one projector would lead to naked singularity. So this solution here cannot be found via an asymptotically flat counterpart. So it's something which is very specific to this sort of theories in gauge supergravity. And indeed, if you see that, you can take the limit of zero cosmological constant, but the limit is singular. So it doesn't exist any counterpart of this sort of black hole in asymptotically flat spacetime. Moreover, they're also peculiar to four dimensions. And indeed, one can see that people have studied as well BPS black holes in five dimensions. But the solutions that they found in five dimensions, which preserve some supersymmetry, need to rotate. So there exists no static BPS black hole, which is embedded in 5D asymptotically spacetime. The ones that exist in five dimensions, they need to have angular momentum in order to preserve some of the supersymmetries. So these solutions were really, I think, were important and gained some renewed interest during the past year, at least, because, as I said, okay, so they can be embedded in M theory, which is compactified on a 7th sphere, and the dual field theory to this class of model is a BGM, which is a superconformant Chern-Simon matter theory. And in particular, 1 year ago, there was a nice result of a group like Benini, Christo, and Zaffaroni that managed to compute via localization, managed to compute a topologically twisted index for ABGM theory. And this index counts the number of states, the number of ground states of the theory, which is compactified on S2 with magnetic flux. And actually, via suitable extremization mechanism, they show that at a critical point, this index here, computed purely on the dual field theory, actually match with the macroscopic entropy of the black hole. This was was performed at the level of the dual field theory, so localization would give you the full result, not only at the large n limit, but of course, in order to compare with the supergravity solution, you need to have a large n. But it could be that this result is even more powerful than what is just exploited now, let's say. So I think this was a very nice result, and that opens the way, of course, to more computation for what concerns all this class of black holes and all sorts of results concerning twisted indices in ABGM-like theories. So once the solution were obtained, now I'm just going to quickly mention that there exist strategies to generalize this BPS solution. So a billion Fay-Leopold's gauge supergravity, given the fact that the scalars are not charged, is amenable to solution generating techniques, which are really a powerful tool in order to take the solution out of extremality, or to just construct new solutions which do not preserve any supersymmetries. So in particular, one can have extremal but non-BPS black holes, which are achieved by squaring the supergravity action in different ways, which are inequivalent. And in particular, if you write the action in terms of square, squared equation, the first order equation might, in certain cases, do not coincide with the supersymmetry equations. So if you solve the first order equation, you will still have an extremal black hole, but this black hole would not actually preserve any supersymmetries. Plus, second one would be that you can also act on via duality transformation with symplectic transformation on the black hole solution that I found before, actually for the magnetic black hole, and generate solutions which actually do not have only magnetic charge, but are also including complex scalars and also electric charges. Plus, one of the other very, very, I would say, almost magic of this sort of solution-generated techniques is that, given the BPS solution, one can generalize it in order to have a black hole with the temperature, and just by simply changing the warp factor, which appear in the matrix, and leaving the matter unchanged. If you remember how was the solution that I showed you before, so this was the warp factor that you find in front of the GTT includes a square, and this is symptomatic of one extremal configuration with temperature equals zero. If you want a solution which instead have a non-zero temperature, you will modify this factor here with a more general polynomial in function of R. You plug it into the Einstein's equation, and you leave the matter, the ansatz for the matter, especially also for the scalar field, unchanged. And actually, it turns out that for a suitable expression of these parameters, this is still a solution of the equation of motion. Okay. It doesn't preserve any supersymmetries.
I mean, presumably, you're changing the Maxwell fields. The Maxwell fields should depend on Q.
Well, Q is a function of the entire parameters of the solution. So the relation between Q, mu, and C changes with respect to the one, but the ansatz for the gauge field remains the same.
I see.
So for the same value of magnetic field, the mass would be different. So this parameter C would be different with respect to the previous one, but the ansatz.
So you're adding one new parameter.
Yes.
Mu then becomes
yes.
True.
So in this case, I will have, yes, the parameter that I add is mu, or conversely, I will have a B1 parameter, which is not related to the charges somehow. So it turns out that this kind of solution-generated techniques work, and hence you can, every time that you get a BPS solution, it turns out that you can, for free, pretty much get exactly a solution with temperature, which is useful when you have to deal with thermodynamics and phase transition, which is an exact solution of the equation of motion, and it's also fully back reacted, which is something that people find it very useful, and I think it gives you a much clearer interpretation probably with respect to having maybe numerical solutions sometimes. And okay, plus one can also generalize it to rotating black holes with not charge, and all sorts of other things that I'm not gonna go into this. And so I just mentioned that the thermal black holes that I just talked about, they are dual to systems in the dual field theory at finite temperature. And what I'm going to discuss now is a particular example, and it's a new example of thermal black hole solution in theories of gauge supergravity, which in this case it's relevant for the description of holographic gas. And I will explain now what I mean by this. So my interest in this sort of problem stems from the fact that I would like to know more. I would like to know and to investigate the existence of bound states. So bound states in asymptotically anti-Sitter spacetime. And in particular, I would like to investigate the possible presence of multi-center black holes, which asymptotically approach anti-Sitter spacetime. And these solutions haven't been constructed yet. And they are interesting because they are supposed to be dual to holographic glass in this way. So this program was actually started by some of the people also, Edgar, in the audience. And so the analogy that I will just briefly mention, I'm not going to go really so much into this sort of discussion, but the basic picture is this one, that like a black hole, the black hole horizon behaves like a liquid. Hence, when you cool it down, like when you lower the temperature of the black hole, in principle, the event horizon can undergo supercooling, and will pretty much become a disordered geometry, a fragmented geometry, still rigid but very disordered, as actually glass is. So since the glass phase transition is not very well understood, actually, one can think that the holographic approach to the glass phase transition, given the fact that you can, the background, the gravity side is a bit like it can include some dynamics feature, could actually describe very well via the strongly coupled field theory, can describe very well this sort of glassy phase transition by means of this system. So by means of single center black holes becoming disordered multi-center geometries. So as I told you before, the question of the existence of multi-center black holes in anti-De Sitter is still not set yet, meaning that multi-center black holes in flat, which are asymptotically approach flat spacetime, they already discovered. And they were discovered quite easily by Majumdar and Papapetro, because in this case, these are solutions of the Einstein-Maxwell system. And it was discovered that for this sort of solution, superposition principle holds. Hence, one can actually find a spacetime for which you can put many different centers. So you will have a multiple configuration with black holes, with each one its own horizon in actually the same spacetime. And these solutions were also generalized by Frédéric Deneff in the context of supergravity, and interpreted in terms of deep brains as well. But such solutions are not so. The superposition principle, which are by means of which the Majumdar-Papapetro solutions were found, actually doesn't exist in a solution with Einstein-Maxwell lambda theories. So in asymptotically ADS spacetime, one, at least so far, people would not be able to find this the correspondence of Majumdar-Papapetro solutions. And actually, you have to say that anti-Sitter spacetime provides a force that makes everything coalesce. And hence, the gravitational pull is too strong, such that the electromagnetic field would make the two solutions be stable at a finite distance, one with respect to the other. So, the question if multicenter black holes in anti-Sitter exist or not, it's still let's say an open problem, and it's still open for discussions. So what we can do so far is that, okay, we could try to search for fully back-reactive solution, but it's a tough problem, actually. What we could do with relatively less effort, but it would still give some insight about the possible existence, it would be to undertake a probe analysis. So we can try to actually put ourselves in a system for which we have a big black hole, which would have a function of our background, and we can sprinkle charged probes on top of this, and we have to see if these probes are stable at a position, which is at a finite distance outside the horizon. This means that there is some hope that that once these probes become larger, they will back react on the metric, but they will still be stable and will not actually enter the big black hole, such that we'll get some hope that actually a composite system of many black holes would exist in this spacetime. And actually, these people in 2013 found that indeed there exist stable and also metastable probes in the background of a thermal dionic AdS. So in the background of a big black hole with scalar fields and charges, you can put probes, charge probes, and some of them, by tuning appropriately the charges and the distance, will be stable at a finite distance and will not coalesce inside the black hole horizon. This gives us hope to find a multicenter black holes also in these sort of scenarios. So we thought about how we could somehow improve this analysis in the case of black holes in supergravity, which arise from M theory with a known holographic dual. And actually, we can include like one of the ingredients that were not really included in this sort of analysis was that in generic compactifications, which are dual to ADS4, which are actually dual to a BGM, generic compactifications of M theory, which gives ADS4, which are dual to a BGM, one linear combination of the gauge field is fixed. So it's massive. And so in general, we would need to find, in order to have the most generic scenario, which is dual to a BGM, we would need to find a background of a full black hole, which doesn't include just scalar profiles and massless gauge fields, as it was studied here. But we would need also to find backgrounds with charge scalars and in principle, also, and in particular, massive vector fields. And that's what we wanted to do, and that's why we constructed starting from a supergravity model. So the supergravity model that we started from is M theory compactified on the homogeneous Sasaki-Einstein manifold M111. This exactly gives a model of N=2 gauge supergravity, which is not Feiliopoulos gauge supergravity. It has a different kind of gauging. But this model is useful because it includes also hypermultiplets, vector multiplets, and in particular one of the vectors that we treated will become massive due to Higgs mechanism. So the supergravity model that I'm working with has the following Lagrangian. So it's pretty much the same as the one that I had before. So it still has a potential and the couplings of the gauge fields and the scalar fields. But also it includes hypermultiplets, and these hypermultiplets are charged. So their covariant derivative has a specific form, which will come into the next slide. So this is the gauging is specified by this form. So these parameters appear in the covariant derivative of the hypermultiplets. And in particular, we have that due to the form of the covariant derivative, the linear combination of the fields, which we indicated by zeta, becomes massive via Higgs mechanism. And moreover, this model has a dual field theory which is exact, which is known, and was studied in 2009 by Jefferies and the group of Francesco Benigni. So we have what we wanted. So we have an actual model which comes from M theory, which has an exact holographic dual, whose lower dimensional supergravity theory has charge scalars, massive vector, but also massless one, and has lots of all possible ingredients of an ADS4 compactification, which is dual to a BGM. So BPS, so of this model was treated before us. Actually, we took as example the paper of Michela Petrini, Nicole Maggi, and Alberto Zaffaroni, because they treated this model and they found BPS black holes. So they found some black holes which preserve, again, one quarter of supersymmetries, And they have zero temperature. However, in order to make some connection with the holographic vitrification picture, we will need to find a black hole with non-zero temperature, and that's what we have done. So we have numerically found a black hole with non-zero temperature, and this black hole will be used as a background for our probe analysis that we will subsequently study. And these black holes correspond, moreover, to M2 and M5 brains, wrapping non-contractible cycles of the internal manifolds. So the system of the of equation of motion coming from the Lagrangian that I showed is very much complicated. So we performed a truncation of our model. So we needed to, we wanted to check, we wanted to reduce and to retain only the minimal subset of modes which are consistent. So we consistently truncated the theory, and we reduced our system to the matter content of five real scalars, one massive vector, and two massless gauge field, plus of course the metric. So what we did, we imposed a statically and spherically symmetric ansatz for our metric. So our black hole will be static because that's the simplest case that we want to have. Plus, we will impose also a purely radial ansatz for the scalar fields, and this is also the most general static and spherically symmetric ansatz for our gauge fields. And at this point, we are left with the task of solving 14 first-order ODEs, which is a remarkable amount of equations. But they are ODEs, and actually, Mathematica can do the trick with a bit of you let the system run overnight, and actually, it spits out a solution at the end of the day. First of all, before going to the numerical procedure, let me mention the fact that, again, in the case of this gauge supergravity theories, the fermion in the theories are electrically charged, and this will impose, again, another quantization condition on the black hole charges, which is written here. So it's a further constraint that we have to impose on our solution. So what we did in order to find a solution, we performed and the search for our solution will be purely numerical. So what we did is that we expand, we shoot from the boundary and from the black hole horizon, and we managed to find a match in between, and this would constrain some of the parameters. So the equation were actually expanded in series at the ADS boundary. They were also expanded in series at the black hole horizon, and tuning the parameters both at the ADS boundary and at the horizon, Mathematica can manage to tune the parameters to minimize the distance, minimize the difference at this point, which lies inside the bulk, until actually this point here is set with the precision of 10 to the minus 15, which we said that it was enough for our standard. So in the end, we managed to find a solution, which is a fully back-reacted solution with five scalars and massive vector, and also other massless vector. And in total, the solution depends on seven parameters. So there are two electric charges, two magnetic charges, the radius of the event horizon, which can alternatively be traded for the temperature or the mass of our solution. And it depends again on these two, which are two leading modes of the scalar fields, because some of the scalar fields that we had in the truncation from the beginning actually had mass minus 2. So the first falloff that falls off in 1 over r is actually included in our analysis as a free parameter in our solution. So we'll manage to...
So you're actually allowing the scalar to have... You're not imposing a boundary condition on the scalar?
For now, no. Yeah, when we will impose the thermodynamics, then we'll set the sigma 1 and eta 1 to 0. It will be fixed to 0. But for now, when we just solve the equations, we left it free for the moment.
And when you do the matching in the middle, do you match the derivative?
Exactly. So the 14th equation of motion, there were actually some of them are first. Well, we reduced all the Einstein's equation, which are also second order. We reduced everything to first order, and then the 14th are just first order.
Oh,
so
I
we
see.
Match both the value and the derivative for every sort of field. Plotted, we can plot again. So this is probably, these are some of the scalar fields are reported here. There are also the work factors. What actually is nice in this picture is that there is the massive, this is the new feature of our solution, namely that in our solution there is a massive vector field, which is non-vanishing. It has a non-trivial radial profile. And for consistency with the equation of motion, it goes to zero both at the horizon and at asymptotic infinity. And it's also like all the solutions that we have found now that we accept in our tradition are the ones who are actually smooth. So there is no singularity going on. They're actually only a solution interpolating from ADS from ADS to the black hole horizon. Okay, so the fact that this massive vector field is this black hole is surrounded by this massive vector, which lies outside the black hole. So in this case, one can consider these black holes as some sort of a composite object. So you have a black hole lying there, surrounded by a cloud of a massive vector field, which is like a massive object which hovers like outside the black hole horizon, which is something that is already something that goes into the direction of having some sort of composite object in anti-sitter spacetime. So it's already something that goes, let's say, closer to what we wanted in the first place.
Can you take away the black hole? I mean, is there a solution with your massive vector turned on and no horizon?
We didn't try to find, because we already imposed the black hole horizon at this point. But it would be nice to try.
Think of it as a composite object. You'd like to know that
they exist without yes.
Exists by itself, without not being supported by the black hole. So.
Yes. We could try and do that. For now, we didn't really try. For now, but so in like thinking of it as a composite object is probably a bit too much, but we wanted to see that, yeah, it's something massive that gravitates outside. So it would be nice to know also, so we this object gravitates outside due to the non-trivial interactions between the matter fields, so the vector, the scalars, they are all coupled together in the supergravity Lagrangian. So we believe that's the reason why it managed to gravitate outside the horizon and not actually falling in. But it would be nice to have a bit more explanation for this fact, I think. And so in order to verify the accuracy of our numerics, we verify that the first law of thermodynamics, which is written in this way, is satisfied by all our solutions. So then, yeah, we confirmed that our solutions are indeed actually black holes, which are not other sort of solution that computer spits out. So this confirms that we have nice black hole solutions. And given the fact that we have verified the law of thermodynamics, we also perform holographic normalization. And then by means of holographic normalization, we got the free energy for our black hole. Hence, we can study the thermodynamics of these new solutions. And that's what I'm going to do now. And for simplicity, since we could tune in our numerical algorithm, we could tune the electromagnetic charges, we will choose to study our solution in the canonical ensemble. So we will fix the electromagnetic charges of our solution and the temperature. And we will see that the configuration that minimizes the free energy will be the one that dominates the thermodynamics of the in the gravity side. So I need to, okay. So as I said, now we will need now to study if there exists a configuration with the same charges, which by simplicity we just set all the other charges to zero but Q2. So one of the electric charges would be no zero, and the others we just set it to zero. So configurations with the same charge and the same temperature will compete in the thermodynamic ensemble. So we need to plot. So for simplicity, we need to plot for our bunch of solution the entropy versus the temperature. So we have that in the regime where Q2 is bigger than a critical value, the temperature is a monotonic function of the entropy. So there exist no multiple branches of solution with the same temperature and the same charge. Because by fixing one charge, we will have just only one solution of temperature. But if we lower the charge, we lower the charge enough. So for Q2, which is smaller than a critical value, then we'll have that the temperature, the graph of the temperature plotted versus the entropy, is not monotonic anymore. So it goes roughly like this. So you can see that in this sort of range of temperature, we will have three different branches here. So we'll have a small branch of black holes. So this will be a medium branch, like medium size. The size is related to the area of the event horizon. And this one would be the large branch of black holes. So in this sort of scenario, so when the charges is lower below a certain threshold, we have that a phase transition can arise. And okay, I can just plot here maybe. So we need to see which black hole dominates. So we need to plot the free energy versus the temperature. So the small black hole, these have this free energy. The medium one, they go like this. These are the medium branch. And the large one, they go all the way down like this. So this is the large one. So the configuration that minimizes the free energy F will win over the ensemble. So if we follow the minimal free energy line, it's this solution here. But then at this point, the larger black hole have lower free energy with respect to the small one. So they will dominate. So it means that small black hole are until here. But at this point, there is a phase transition at this temperature here, temperature critical, well, temperature of the phase transition. So the small black hole become actually large ones because they have their free energy is lower with respect to the ones of the small ones. Plus, one can see from this picture that the medium black holes were here. They're never part of the thermodynamic ensemble because their free energy is always higher than the other two branches. Plus, they have also negative specific heat, so they're really not stable configuration, and they will never appear in our ensemble. And so this sort of scenario is not really new, actually. So we discovered this first order phase transition, but it's kind of like it's reminiscent of what happens in the case of ADS raised to Nordstrom black holes, and was found before by Chamberlain and Parra, Johnson and Myers in the 90s. So what we have to add, what we can add new to the picture, is the fact that we have this massive vector field. So we can actually, at this point, try to see what happens during the phase transition to the massive vector. And actually, we can see that, so the small black holes, like zeta is the massive vector field. So small black holes are indicated with the blue one, the large are the green one, and then the medium are not never part, but they are indicated in orange. So one would see that during the phase transition, the small black holes become large, but the small black holes have also a higher value of the massive gauge field. So it seems that the massive gauge field, like when the black hole is transitioning from small to large, it decreases a lot. Decreases a lot its amplitude. So if you want to see something like a massive vector field here, it would mean that a small hairy black hole becomes a large but less hairy one. And let me first make a bit of a further remark. And the remark involves the fact that just to have an idea of how is this process different with respect to what happened in the holographic superconductor picture. So the process that I just described involved two branches of black hole where the massive vector is never actually vanishing. So the massive vector is always turned on. There's no restoration of symmetry for any finite temperature. While in the holographic superconductor picture, you have that above a certain temperature, the condensate ceases, the condensate is not there anymore, and there is a restoration of symmetry. While in this case, the symmetry is always broken for any finite temperature and never restored.
So when you were describing these, you say you fix the temperature and the electric charge.
Yes.
So in the ensemble, you have the ordinary Reisner-Nordstrom ADS.
Not for this sort of scenario.
Why not?
Because so there is a specific value of the electric charge for which there is a solution with constant scalars, but if you have a different value of the charges, you cannot have constant scalars anymore.
But you only fix one charge.
I fix one charge, and then I fix also to zero all the others.
So you're saying the Reisner-Nordström
doesn't appear.
Is not even part of your ensemble for some reason.
At least not for some specific value of the charges. And this happens because you have like scalars are coupled in the supergravity Lagrangian. So there is just a specific value of the charges for which you have you have constant scalars.
I see.
If you want, I know it was.
I see what you mean now.
It's okay.
But so that already precludes. I mean, to get something analogous to the holographic superconductor, you at least need a theory which has both the allowed solutions, and then you can see which one dominates. But you're not even allowing the Reisner-Nordström.
For now, not. I mean, it's a property. Yes, I mean. It's a property of our theory, like the supergravity theory that we started from. It doesn't allow us to have like the normal Reisner-Nordström black hole, at least not in a certain range of charges.
Yes.
So okay, okay. Then I'll okay. So I'll start now just with some just dealing with the work in progress. It's gonna be probably okay. Now we have found this this new black hole with the massive vector field and with a which is a very like smooth solution and everything, and at least for the stable branch, that the ones that we found proper solutions which actually dominate the ensemble, we can use this solution. We'll have a function of background for the probe analysis. So what we would like to do at this point, which is something that is still work in progress and we still haven't really figured out everything at this point, is that we would like to have our new black hole to be the background for our system, and to sprinkle charge probes on top of this new black hole and see if the probes can actually be stable, if there exists a configuration outside the horizon for which a probe can actually sit there and not really merge inside the black hole. And so this scenario was found. So this scenario, these people already in 2013, with a different sort of black hole background, studied the probe analysis and actually extracted the probe potential here. And they examined all the possible and they charted all the space of configuration in order to see if there exists some stable probes in their theory. So we can see that how come a probe is stable? Well, the probe potential is said to be zero at the black hole horizon. So if a probe has if there exists a minimum of the potential which is outside the black hole horizon and it has also a negative value, then the probe is stable. Namely, the probe will stay outside the black hole horizon at a finite distance, and it's energetically favorable for the probe to just stay outside and not tunnel into the black hole, just for simple energy reasons. Plus, there exist also other instances in which the probes are unstable, like the green line that I found here. So there exist actually probe potentials for which the probe do not exhibit any minima. And in that case, for certain kind of probes, like depending on the tuning of the charges in this case for the unstable would just tunnel directly inside the black hole. But there can exist also metastable solutions. So metastable solutions are those for which there exists a minima, but the minima is not a global. There exists a minima outside the horizon, like this, but the minima is not a global minimum. So the minimum is just happens at a positive value for the potential of the probe, and eventually, the probe will just tunnel inside the black hole because the energetically favored configuration is the one having the probe. In order to minimize its energy, will just tunnel into the black hole after a certain time.
But if you're looking for classical solutions, you started off asking, are there multi-black hole solutions in AES, which I thought you meant classical static multiple black hole horizons.
Yes.
So then there's no quantum tunneling.
No, but I would say that, would you say that metastable state like this one, you can say that classically it would stay outside, but then
if that's the correct potential for a very, very small black hole,
so the
then yes, I mean, a black hole would sit at the minimum and sit there forever.
I think the curiosity here is more related to this kind of glassy description where you have little free energy valleys and the stuff can kind of move around. And so I think that's the motivation for just putting in quantum corrections and looking at this.
Yeah, you, it's a different we need to find it, like quantum corrections probably, or like to consider some quantum effect. I just say that like I would just expect that the probes will then back react and it will just form multi-center black holes will be the one that actually would sit here. Please. And a few last remarks is that of course, as like in the whole vitrification picture, for which a black hole, like which is liquid, turns into something like which is multi-centered by lowering the temperature, we expect now like the full expectation of this probe analysis is that probably at high temperature, so for a background black hole which is very whose temperature is very high, there exist very few stable probes, actually. So for at high temperature, I expect that the probe will be more prone to enter the black hole horizon, while by lowering the temperature, I will expect the stable and metastable valley, like the stable and metastable minima, to be highly densely populated. And of course, this is still work in progress, so we would still need to find a proper probe action, first of all. And then we will need to chart the parameter space of the various probe charges. And we will look for then stable and metastable probes, and then we'll try to see if at least there exist stable and metastable probes. And this would be a hint that actually multicenter black hole in these sort of scenarios with massive vector and so on can still arise. And plus, the fact that we have a background with a massive vector field and charge scalars and everything will allow us to compare with the previous case that was studied by Frederick and his collaborator. And in the previous case, they had to deal with uncharged scalars. So by means of the new picture that we have now with a black hole with a massive vector field, we can take into account, actually, we can have a feel of what's the effect of the interaction between the probe particle and this condensate that surrounds the black hole at this point. And I think I'm probably ready to give you the summary. I don't know what time is it, maybe, but okay. So I first gave you a bit of an outlook about the Faliopoulos gauge supergravity. So this model is probably a bit of the simplest one, which has actually uncharged scalars, and the equation of motion of this model are actually amenable to finding analytic solution. And given the fact that we have analytic solutions, well, we can compute the entropy, and via localization techniques on the dual field theory, one can actually have the matching between macroscopic black hole entropy and the ground states of the ABJM dual field theories. And one possible generalization of that is that it exists also BPS solutions with massive vectors, and actually for the same model that we have found the new solutions. So it would be nice to take into account and to try to perform the microstate counting for the theories which are dual to M theory compactified on M111 and other models. And the other topic that instead I touched is that I showed you that for charge scalars and for massive vector fields, the equations become very complicated. It's a very big system of equations which are coupled, but actually one can, with numerical techniques, one can find a fully back-reactive exact solution. And this presents also some sort of interesting thermodynamics features at the level of massive vector. And once the probe analysis will be performed, one can actually try to tackle more quantitative effect of this holographic vitrification picture. Namely, one could try to study maybe transport coefficient or viscosity related to this sort of multicenter or composite configuration, and give a bit of a more substantial, a bit more quantitative characterization of this dual system, which is the holographic glass.
The
sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think for one, I mean, we couldn't chart. Well, I mean, we didn't go all the way through. I mean, I think in principle it would be able to go all the way to up to further temperature. It's just that it was like the phase transition happened for relatively small temperatures, so that's why we focused our attention on this. But I believe it's possible to go all the way up.
So what would happen to free energy? It just goes down and down and down and down further?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it would be this branch.
On your slides, you said that there exists no multi-centered ABS black hole. What are the restrictions on that statement? Because there are these like ADS3 black holes, for example, that have centers on the compact manifold.
Ah, okay.
So what's the precise statement?
I was probably just restricting myself to ADS4 black holes, which is something that I think there exists no Majumdar Papapetru like solutions that we know. I know that Gary and his collaborators found some sort of hovering black hole on top of a black membrane. So there for sure exists some steps towards this sort of configuration, but it was just that my accent was on there do not exist any trivial generalizations of the Majumdar Papapetru one, who at first sight one could expect, but they're not.
Okay, thank you.